Hello and welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who are not necessarily politics experts. So if you have not watched the news in a month, in 6 months, it doesn't matter. I promise you will still follow absolutely everything that is said in every episode of this podcast. So you'll always feel really nicely up to date and everything will feel very good and contextualised, regardless of as to how kind of in the loop you are. I'm Julia Bell. And today we will, I'm going to try and keep it quite quick, just because I'm really, truly sick of talking about COVID. So let's try not to go on about it too much. But I am going to run you through what on earth is going on with this so-called pingdemic. That is the term that all the papers are using to refer to the fact that there is this record amount of 618,903 alerts that have been sent to users of the NHS app last week. So that's the app that tells you to isolate because you've been somewhat, however loosely, in contact with someone that's tested positive. It might just be that you've checked into the same pub using your app, or it might have been that you've been sitting next to them for 3 hours. You can't possibly know. All you get is the dreaded ping, and then you know that you have to self-isolate. And that's happened to 618,903 people last week. That is so many. My maths is rubbish, but isn't that about 1% of the population of the UK? Don't we have about 70 million people here? And 619,000 is just, it's out of control. It's out of control. And some of the victims of said pingdemic are rather high profile. Our very own Prime Minister is self-isolating. Our Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, is self-isolating. The Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, Dan Rosenfield, self-isolating. Of course, not to mention the Health Secretary, so the person who is supposedly in charge of keeping us all safe from this thing, is indeed self-isolating, not actually because he got pinged arbitrarily. He has actually tested positive for COVID. So that's a little bit different. But there you go. That's just a snapshot of how many people within the government themselves are having to stay home just in time, I might add, for Freedom Day, where England supposedly unlocked entirely and all restrictions went away on the 19th of July. So we've got to talk about what's going on with the pingdemic and the effects that's sort of having on us and on various industries across the country, because as you can imagine, with that many people being stuck at home, society is genuinely struggling to function. And I'll also talk you through the flack that the government have been getting for their more than confusing messaging when it comes to what we do when we get pinged. It is very hard to keep track as to whether it's a legal requirement that you self-isolate, or whether it's more kind of voluntary and whether there's a heavy onus on you to do it, but you don't actually have to. Because honestly, depending on who you speak to within government, you get a different answer. So I want to run you through that and leave you with a nice piece of clarity where I can. By the way, I'm not sure if you've seen yet, the government, you know how they love these three-word slogans? And all throughout the various chapters of the pandemic, we've had different ones. So at the height of lockdown one, I'm sure you'll remember they had... it wasn't three words, it was three parts. They had stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Do you remember that one? And that was plastered across their podiums when they would do those daily press briefings. So we were all very exposed to that slogan, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. And that one was very clear. I appreciated it. It was sensible. It was difficult to misunderstand. Stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Then we moved on to a, in my opinion, less effective, less desirable one. It was stay alert. Who the fuck knows what that means? Stay alert, control the virus, save lives. So that was what we moved on to. And I don't think I was alone in my disdain for that one, just because it was so unclear what it actually meant. Stay alert. This is an invisible virus. How can you stay alert? Yeah, I had some issues with that one. Then we moved on to this more recent one, I think, if I'm getting the order right, which is, of course, hands, face, space. Makes a little bit more sense and it's nice and catchy. And that's kind of represented this easing period. Yes, you can go out and about, but wash your hands, cover your face and make sure you're leaving space between people. But now we have moved on to something new. And in my opinion, it's in the same category as stay alert. It's very vague. And to be honest, It's riddled in irony. So the new one is, drumroll please, keep life moving. Keep life moving. And I truly hope that the irony of that is not lost on the government officials, including the Prime Minister, who designed the slogan and then proceeded to be pinged and forced to stay trapped indoors. Keep life moving, except if you get pinged, which fucking loads of people are getting. You love to see it. But yeah, before I get into the bulk of the episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast or click follow if you're listening on Spotify. I cannot stress enough how much that helps me. And if you want to take it a step further and really do me a favour, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave the pod a 5-star review and say something really nice. That brings over lots more listeners. And then I think most importantly of all, share the pod with your friends. Pop it on social media, share it on your Instagram stories, and tag me at JuliaBell_X. All right, with that out of the way, let's keep life moving, as the government say but don't do, and let's talk about this pingdemic. So let me paint a picture for you. This is the kind of perfect storm of the last few weeks. Oh, could you hear that? It's thunder and lightning in the background. It's really stormy today. It's making me feel quite cozy because I have to build up this like, can you hear that? Hopefully you can. Yeah, it's quite cozy because I have to build this sort of fort to record the podcast. Lots of duvets and cushions and things to make sure the acoustics are nice. And obviously lately it's been a bit tough because the weather's been so hot, but on a day like today, it's really nice. Anyway, let me paint this perfect storm for you. And what a perfect day to do so. Imagine you run a supermarket, and then one by one, a huge chunk of your warehouse staff, and then your shop floor staff, and then your delivery drivers get pinged by the NHS app. Add on top of that, so you're already dealing with your own staff shortages, add on top of that the companies that supply you with your produce that you sell on the shop floor all start ringing you up to apologise for delays, because, yes indeed, their staff are also getting pinged as well. Add on top of that, because this is a reality of the situation, add on top of that, petrol station pumps are empty because the lorry drivers who deliver the petrol are, you guessed it, loads of them having to self-isolate. So even if you got your delivery drivers in, they can't take the food to the customers because there's no petrol. And then, just because when life gets you down, it really likes to fucking go in on you sometimes, there happens to be record-breakingly catastrophic floods in the likes of Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, the Netherlands. I'm sure you saw the footage. It was absolutely nuts. Literal entire villages being swamped in water, lorries being upturned, cars completely submerged. And bear in mind, if you're a supermarket chain, a lot of your supply chain comes from, a lot of your products come from Germany and Belgium and the Netherlands. So you physically can't get your hands on those goods because they're dealing with their own literal natural disasters. And I think you can start to see, if you do imagine yourself at that point, why there is mounting pressure on the government from business owners such as that to do something to address this so-called pingdemic. Please help us. It's not sustainable. We need our workforce on the floor, not just because we want to be able to conduct business, but also because our consumers need these products. We've got pubs and shops having to actually close their doors because there aren't enough people to run the place properly. And that is, of course, affecting, you know, the little old ladies who need their food and their loo roll and all the rest of it. And I'm sure you've seen kind of pictures circulating on social media. We're getting glimmers, but not quite as bad, nowhere near as bad, of the sort of stockpiling behaviour that we saw at the start of the pandemic last year. So people are clocking that the supply chain has been messed up and they're going in and storming the places and buying enough loo roll for a lifetime. And it's not just affecting supermarkets. I jumped on Radio 5 Live, as I do most weekends, to run through the headlines with Stephen Nolan. I was doing that last night. And on the Sunday Telegraph front page for today, so for the 24th of July, it read, "Pingdemic chaos engulfs Met," i.e. the Metropolitan Police. And it said one in five members of the London Metropolitan Police had been pinged and were stuck at home self-isolating. One in five. And then the piece went on to say, I'll quote here, Ken Marsh, the chairman of the Metropolitan Police Federation, said, quote, "We are massively struggling and are not performing the role properly." And again, the timing of it is probably the biggest issue here, because like I said, we've had quote-unquote Freedom Day on the 19th of July. England's restrictions have lifted pretty much entirely. We can go clubbing, we don't have to wear masks, we don't have to socially distance, there's no caps on what numbers we can meet up in, weddings, funerals and so on. But with the nighttime economy being a pretty hot spot for criminal activity, to know that we've got a fifth of the police missing isn't the most comforting thing. So again, this pandemic, not ideal. And then I was talking about supermarkets earlier. I forgot to give you this little nugget. The boss of Iceland, he's called Richard Walker. He said that he had to hire 2,000 temp workers just to deal with the fact that so many of his full-time staff or his permanent staff had been pinged. 2,000 people across the country that he's had to hire just short-term to deal with this. So it's affecting the police, it's affecting supermarkets, supply chains, but it's also affecting train lines. And I, you know, dealt with this consequence directly. My friend came up to visit at the end of the week from the southwest, and he'd booked his train home at a reasonable hour on the Friday afternoon. I think he wanted to head off at about 7 p.m. And trains run until the middle of the night, you know. And he got to the station and the staff said, look, that train isn't running. And he was like, okay, well, you know, I'll just wait and I'll get the one after. And then they went back to him and they said, you know what? No trains are running. And the reason was there just wasn't anyone to run them. Everyone that needed to be there had been pinged and had to go home to self-isolate. So my mate, stuck at the station with no way of getting home, had to turn on his heel and come back to mine and stay another night. It was lucky that I was in. So you get the picture. The pingdemic is having these sort of huge ripple effects across loads of areas of our society, and this is a kind of unintended consequence of what is quite an effective track and trace system. Us all having this app, it works almost too well, and now it is blocking society from functioning properly. Now, that is one element of this, and I'll talk about solutions in a second. But another kind of key component into the quote-unquote chaos is the government's messaging around what happens when you get pinged. That has been very confusing. So one thing we know for sure is if you get contacted by the NHS track and trace team, so if you get a physical person phoning you up directly and instructing you to isolate, then you are legally bound to do so. And it is official law, and if you refuse, you run the risk of being fined up to £1,000, I think it is. So that's if you get contacted directly by the NHS track and trace. But the question that's confusing is what surrounds the app, right? The NHS track and trace app that pings you. And it's a very simple question. If we get pinged by the app and not called by somebody directly, is it still legally binding that we self-isolate? Or is it more of a kind of voluntary guidance thing? Super binary question. Is it law or is it not? And yet, depending on who you speak to within the government, you'd have gotten a completely different answer. Have a listen to this. It's Paul Scully, a Conservative Party MP and business minister. And he was on Good Morning Britain on the 20th of July. So 5 days before I recorded this podcast. Have a listen to this.
It's important that we remember the legal position, which is that if you are contacted by NHS Test and Trace or you're seeking isolation payments, you're legally required to isolate. The app is there to allow you to make informed decisions.
So, yes, because the app is advisory, but if you're contacted directly by Test and Trace, then you are obliged to isolate.
So that's Paul Scully there saying that the NHS app, is there to help you make quote-unquote informed decisions. Which, I mean, how do you interpret these things? As far as I'm concerned, something that's there to help you make an informed decision is not legally binding, but not even that. It's very voluntary. You can basically decide what you're doing. So that's one government insider giving us advice on a very big national platform that is Good Morning Britain on ITV. Then you cut to Prime Minister's questions the next day, and Boris Johnson had slightly different messaging, I would say, when Keir Starmer pulled him up on this. Have a listen to how that went down.
Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister says that everyone understands the government's position as to what you should do if you're pinged by the NHS app. That's a very interesting answer, because the government's all over the place on this. Yes, yesterday, his business minister said the app was an advisory tool only. Another government minister, and I kid you not, said yesterday the app is just to allow you to make informed decisions. What on earth does that mean? Allow you to make informed decisions. And of course, the Prime Minister and the Chancellor spent the weekend trying to dodge isolation altogether. So, Mr. Speaker, the British people are trying to follow the rules. How can they, when his ministers keep making them up as they go along?
No, Mr. Speaker. If I may laboriously repeat the answer that I gave earlier on to the Right Honourable Gentleman, so just to get it into his head yet again, isolation is a very important part of our armoury against COVID. We're going forward, as everybody knows, to a new system on August the 16th based on testing. But in the meantime, when you're advised to isolate, to protect others and to protect your family against the spread of the disease, then you should do so.
Okay, so the quote from him there was, if you are advised to self-isolate from the app, then you should do so. You should do so. Let's note, he's avoiding using words like legally binding or criminal offence, but he is saying, if you're advised, then you should. So, you know, I think that basically from that we can interpret that it isn't legally binding that you self-isolate. However, it is heavily, heavily expected of you to do so. And this idea of it just being there to help you make an informed decision is way too soft. You really ought to do it. Okay, that is the government's messaging on self-isolation sorted. Kind of, as best as I possibly could. Now let's look, frankly, at the bigger question of how are they addressing this pingdemic? Because as I've said, it's clearly not that sustainable for much longer. We've got police and transport workers and healthcare workers and bin men and women, they're all stuck at home. That has an incredibly negative impact on us, especially if they're able to prove that they don't have COVID. So the government have essentially released a list of industry sectors and vocations where the people involved are able to be exempt from self-isolation rules. So if they get pinged, then they don't have to self-isolate. And instead, they'll just need to take tests. And that's how they prove they've not got it. So if they take a test at least once a day, even if they get pinged, we need them too much. As long as they're negative, they can go to work. And the list was pretty limited. Healthcare workers, border patrol. It's been updated a little bit. I think bin men have been added on. Supermarket workers in various areas. It's not a blanket rule, but there's been quite a few exemptions that have been ruled out, that have been laid out. And you might be wondering, right, fine, that's key workers. What about the rest of us? You might have double jabbed yourself and you might not be massively keen on the idea of self-isolating, which I think a lot of people aren't. But, you know, will we be stuck with this pingdemic idea ad infinitum? And the answer for you is that Boris Johnson has a plan when it comes to that. So let's play you the words directly from the horse's mouth. This is what he said at PMQs on Thursday.
I think that everybody understands the inconvenience of being pinged, as he rightly says. Here I am. I wish I was with you in the Commons chamber today. I apologise to everybody in business, up and down the land, in all kinds of services, public sector or otherwise, who are experiencing inconvenience. We will be switching, as the House knows, to a system based on contact testing rather than contact isolation. But until then, Mr. Speaker, I just must remind everybody that isolation is a vital tool of our defence against the disease. And of course, even if you have been vaccinated, you can still pass it on, though that risk is reduced. And the overwhelming arguments, Mr. Speaker, are for getting a jab. Everybody should get a jab.
So there you go. From August the 16th, we will be supposedly switching, but don't put your house on it because you know these things move around all the time. But we will supposedly be switching to a system of testing rather than isolating. So kind of what these exempt people are doing now will probably be a blanket rule for everybody who is double jabbed by August 16th. And again, if you're not double jabbed, I think self-isolating is what you're going to have to stick to. Incidentally, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this, that Prime Minister's Questions was the 60th anniversary of Prime Minister's Questions. So this was a concept that was introduced by Prime Minister Harold Macmillan 60 years ago. And isn't it weird to think before that, we didn't have this system where all the MPs could, you know, basically line up to get their questions answered and they could hold the Prime Minister to account. And now with Parliament TV, we've got that direct access to such a sort of, I don't know, it's like a beacon of scrutiny, isn't it? We watch our own MPs standing up and saying to the Prime Minister, right, what are you doing about this? And he has to defend himself. What a glorious tradition that is. And it was the 60th anniversary. It was kind of a shame though, because that anniversary edition of it was a bit of a shit show. Boris Johnson obviously had to link in because he's self-isolating at his sort of holiday home in Chequers. And if you've not seen Chequers, Google it. It's so nice. Like, what a place to have to self-isolate in. It's got a pool and it's this huge country estate and it's absolutely beautiful and there's loads of land around it. So kind of lucky to be stuck there. But anyway, he had to link in for PMQs and there were so many problems with the sound. And at one point, the speaker, Sir Lindsay Hoyle, had to stop him mid-answer to say, Mr. Prime Minister, I can't hear you. Oh, God. It was just a big nightmare. So yeah, kind of put the anniversary to shame a little bit, but still nice to acknowledge the importance of that tradition. Now, I just want to talk a little bit more about this double jab debate, this sort of expectation that is on a lot of us to get two jabs. As you've probably heard, if like me, you're quite partial to a bit of nightclubbing here and there, by the end of September, in England anyway, it will be required of anyone who wants to get into a nightclub that they have to provide proof of a double vaccine if they want to get in. So you can't just prove immunity anymore. A negative test isn't enough. You will have to show that you've had two jabs. Now you might be wondering, hang on, why September? Surely if the point is that nightclubs are, you know, threatening of being super spreaders, as Jonathan Van Tam put it, then why are they not rolling this out now and forcing people to provide their health record now? And the answer to that is the government are kind of wanting to wait until everybody's at least had the option to get two jabs. So before they start literally blocking people from going clubbing, they want to make sure that anyone who wants to go clubbing has had the choice to get two jabs. Because, for example, I was only able to book my first jab in June, and my second one I can't get until the 14th of August. That's when my second one's due. So if the government were to implement a double jab law now for nightclubs, then technically myself and anyone else who literally hasn't had a chance to get their second jab yet would be basically discriminated against. So that's the point. They're trying to keep it fair. Maybe you think that's absolutely absurd, or maybe you think that's quite a good way to make sure that venues aren't turning potential customers away when it's been a really tough 16 months. It's kind of up to you how you feel about that. But what I'm interested in is talking about the debate itself. Should we live in a world where our governments are saying, you can't do this unless you've had this vaccine? Because to be honest, it's something that I have struggled with for a long time, just this idea that we have to have that level of invasiveness from our own government. Don't get me wrong, I am pro-vax, but just the sort of ethical principle of the idea where we have to prove our health records to do something, and it's monitored to such an extent by the government, it gives me the heebie-jeebies, I have to be honest. But perhaps you look at it as a necessary step. You know, the take-up of the jab amongst young people in the UK is lower than all other age demographics. Last I checked, in England, 35% of 18 to 29 year olds have not been vaccinated at all. That's a big chunk. So do you think actually this is just something that needs to happen in order to get young people to just get the jab so we can all get this herd immunity going and move on? I think it's interesting. And this debate is rolling out more and more mainstream. It's not just applying to nightclubs anymore. It seems heavy hints from government insiders are coming out that Premier League football will require two jabs for supporters to get in and spectate. So will we get into a point where literally just to go anywhere with that's remotely crowded, you're just going to need to prove that you've had two jabs? Are we going to need a passport, a vaccine passport, to do anything of note? And what are the ethics around that? And how long can we expect that? You know, if we get through the other end of this pandemic, can they put an end to that law? Or are we always going to live in a world where we've got to bring our health records everywhere? I think it's a very worthwhile conversation to have. And it is proving increasingly tense. So I read recently that Eric Clapton, obviously the famous singer, he's come out to say he's actually going to refuse to play at venues that demand vaccine passports. So he's going to refuse to play anywhere that says you've got to have double jabs to get in. So he's kind of taking a political stance on this. And it should be interesting. He's booked to do a show at the Royal Albert Hall in London in May 2022. You know, if these rules do go ahead, by then we may still be in a place where venues are asking for double jabs. So is he going to cancel it? I'm interested to see how that goes. And I'm interested to see if we end up in a place where we've got a sort of political divide between artists and sports people and performers and the government. And then the venues that get stuck in between, and they've had a horrible 16 months, they've been out of business, they're desperately trying to get bums on seats. And now they're trapped between a rock and a hard place of this political divide. And another interesting aspect of this is the different approaches that have been taken depending on the country that you look at. So I'm not sure if you've seen the news in France. They've taken a pretty hardline approach to this vaccine passport thing. President Emmanuel Macron recently announced that all healthcare workers absolutely had to get jabbed by September or they risk not being paid. So it doesn't get more mandatory than that. And with more hardline approaches from France, from Wednesday this week, so that's 2 days or 3 days time from when I'm recording this, the French public, not just health workers, everybody in the public will need a COVID pass, which basically is proof of vaccination or a negative test, to get into museums and cinemas. So that, you know, just to go to a museum, you need to bring some sort of health proof with you. And in August, they're very likely to extend that even further to cafes, restaurants and shopping malls. So that's really ubiquitous, isn't it? And Macron said, and this is me quoting him here, "I am aware of what I'm asking of you, and I know that you're ready for this commitment. This is part, in a way, of your sense of duty." I thought this would cause a kind of rebellion amongst people. I thought it would breed a sense of resentment, you know, like I'm all for a community effort, but as soon as my government forces me to do it, I don't want to do it. But just looking at the data, it seems the public have just sort of thought, right, we've got no choice here, let's just do it, because the take-up of the vaccine surged as a result of those new laws, those new rules. So it seems that French public have thought, right, we're not going to be able to live our lives properly unless we do this, so let's just do it. It's an interesting debate, isn't it? Do we need to start taking this more forceful approach to just get us out the other end of this pandemic and still allow us to enjoy things like football games and comedy clubs? Or is it a step too far when the government start demanding that you prove your health records to simply go to a cafe? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Get in touch with me at @JuliaBell_X on Instagram and Twitter. And listen, you might have seen that Parliament have entered recess now for the summer. So our MPs will not be returning to the Commons until the 6th of September. It's basically like a summer holiday for them, a summer break. So what we can hope and pray for is that the next few weeks is a little bit slower. You know, the government can't really pass any laws. They can't make any huge changes. There won't be PMQs for a little while. So what would be nice is if there's a bit of a slow news summer. Wouldn't that be wonderful for our mental health? We can only dream. So I hope you don't mind. I might take a little step back from the podcast for a while. I will, of course, I mean, if there's something that comes up in the news that I can't resist talking about, you know that I'll be here. But I don't want to bombard you when it's not necessary. So take a little mental break. Enjoy the really stormy summer that is the current situation in London. I don't know if you heard that crack of thunder, but it's getting really bad now. So I'm going to go and wrap myself up in a duvet and watch Love Island. Oh, it's so good at the moment. Let me know if you're Team Hugo or Team Toby. I'm Team Hugo. Oh, and I just thought to mention, I will keep uploading onto Patreon. I'll keep doing opinion pieces and little vlogs and interviews and stuff like that. So make sure you are subscribed to my Patreon. The link is in the episode description. I did a really sassy piece on the latest Dominic Cummings tell-all interview that he did with the BBC. I wrote some commentary on that recently that went down well. So click on that and do enter that community. It's a great place to be because the podcast might be a little quiet for the next few weeks, which is quite nice. All right, have a good week. I love you lots. Goodbye.